Today is Wednesday, January 27th. What really happened in the days leading up to the Capitol riot? We're hearing the first testimony from the acting Capitol Police Chief, and we'll tell you who has a very different take. Also, from Reddit to Wall Street, how small-time investors are having a big impact on the stock market. Plus, the CDC's latest case for bringing kids back in the classroom. An internet outage affected millions of Americans, and the first fully private crew taking a vacation to space. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in around 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. For the first time since the Capitol riot 3 weeks ago, the head of the Capitol Police Department testified before Congress. Acting Chief Yogananda Pittman apologized to lawmakers, saying her department, quote, fully expects to answer to you and the American people. To be clear, she was not in charge when the riot actually happened, but since that police chief stepped down in the face of criticism, Pittman has since taken over. She described the Capitol invasion as a terrorist attack. She also said her department knew there was potential the planned protests could turn violent and the Capitol was a target before anything actually happened. But she says her agency was simply outnumbered, even though they apparently tried to prepare. Pittman told lawmakers that former Chief Stephen Sund asked board members in charge of overseeing the department to declare a state of emergency and call in the National Guard 2 days ahead of the January 6th rally. But she says the board denied both requests. Well, the chief and two of the three board members, known as the House and Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, ultimately resigned after the riot. The one board member still serving, the architect of the Capitol, had a different take, though. J. Brett Blanton said in a statement he actually never got any requests from the former chief and that no one ever contacted his office with concerns ahead of time. So, of course, lawmakers say they still have a lot of unanswered questions. It's starting to look more likely former President Trump will be acquitted in his upcoming impeachment trial. Republican Senator Rand Paul tried to dismiss the trial altogether, arguing it's unconstitutional now that Trump is out of office. And most, all but five, of his Republican colleagues agreed. But Democrats argued letting former officials off the hook would be a get-out-of-jail-free card for any president committing an impeachable offense. Ultimately, though, the final vote was 55 to 45, so the trial will go on as planned the week of February 8th. Still, the number of Republicans now showing they're against this effort will mean more after the trial, when the Senate votes on whether or not to actually convict Trump. Instead of just a majority of votes, it'll take two-thirds of senators to agree to convict, essentially meaning 17 Republicans would have to join all Democrats. Well, political analysts say the fact that only five Republicans are on board with the trial happening at all speaks volumes. But some Republicans have wanted to make it clear this latest vote does not necessarily determine their next vote. Stay tuned. President Biden has now signed more executive actions in his first week than any other U.S. president. And while some people disagree about whether that's a good or bad thing, since he doesn't always need to lean on Congress to get those done, Biden has not slowed down yet. He signed four more executive actions yesterday, all meant to advance racial equality in the U.S. One order tells the Department of Housing and Urban Development to strengthen anti-discrimination housing policies. Another puts an end to new contracts between the federal government and private prisons. Biden says he does not want anyone profiting off federal prisoners. Supporters of for-profit prisons, though, argue they can be more cost-effective compared to others, but that's disputed. A third order gives federal agencies 90 days to come up with a plan and work more closely with tribal nations on issues that involve them. And finally, there's an action to do more to prevent violence and bias against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, including better data collection and more outreach. There's been a spike in harassment against those groups since the coronavirus spread from China to the U.S. Some civil rights activists are applauding these actions, while others say they're not nearly enough. Either way, Biden is calling this just the start. It's the country accused of interfering in U.S. elections, hacking U.S. government agencies, and poisoning one of its own citizens. Well, President Biden just had his first call with that nation's leader, Russian President Vladimir Putin. The White House says Biden wanted to raise concerns about those accusations and make it clear the U.S. will respond firmly to defend itself. But that's really all we know about how the call went. The White House did not get into specific details about Putin's response to all of this. The Russian government simply said normalizing ties between the U.S. and Russia would serve the interests of both countries and the security of the whole world. There was at least one point where the two leaders found common ground, extending a nuclear arms treaty the U.S. has with Russia for another 5 years. It essentially keeps certain restrictions and rules in place on both countries' nuclear weapons. Here in the U.S., top CDC scientists are pressing for more schools to reopen for in-person classes. More than a year into the pandemic now, the New York Times reports about half of the nation's students are still doing all virtual learning. Well, a new CDC report shows in-person classes typically do not cause huge COVID-19 outbreaks. Now, keep in mind, that's only if certain measures are followed, like everyone wears a mask and students are able to spread apart. And this isn't the first time the CDC has pushed to reopen schools for learning. Now, though, the CDC is encouraging all schools to reopen by this summer, not just because of this new research, but also because pediatricians have said school closures can have harmful effects on kids. Ultimately, the decision over whether schools stay open or closed is up to the school districts and local communities. More news just ahead, but first, this episode is made possible thanks to Ritual. Ritual is not your typical multivitamin. Its clean, vegan-friendly formula is made with key nutrients, including vitamin D3, to help fill gaps in the diet and informs your body can actually use. Plus, no shady extras allowed. That's why I first started taking Ritual vitamins months ago. Yep, even if I was not partnering with them, I would be taking these vitamins. And then I realized not only is the company upfront about exactly what goes in the vitamins and why, but they also are just easy vitamins to take. They're delivered right to my door with free shipping each month, and I can take them with or without food. Ritual's fresh-tasting, delayed-release capsules are designed to dissolve later in less sensitive areas of the stomach, which makes that possible. You deserve to know what's in your multivitamin. That's why Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Just visit ritual.com/newsworthy to start your Ritual today. That's ritual.com/newsworthy. Okay, now back to the news. It's not what you want in a world where more people than ever are working from home. Millions of Americans in the Northeast dealt with internet outages yesterday, from New York City to Boston to Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. It all started with a Verizon network failure. People reported problems with Slack, Zoom, Amazon Web Services, and Google's Gmail, just to name a few examples. And at this point, it looks like all the problems can be traced back to Verizon. The service seems to be back up and running, but Verizon says it's still trying to figure out what caused the outage, and the FCC is investigating as well. A surging trend is happening in the U.S. stock market. CNN describes it as the David versus Goliath of Wall Street. It's sending stocks, once seen as doomed, to new highs. It's the reason the stock of once-troubled video game retailer GameStop quadrupled this month, skyrocketing to around $150 a share. So what's behind this? Well, it's small-time investors, and a ton of them. They've made it their mission to overcome the influence of what's known as a short seller. That's an investor who bets against a company, thinking it'll go down. Short sellers are usually pretty powerful, too, but it seems like they've met their match. Rookie investors are collaborating on Reddit and other forums to basically take them down. They're identifying stocks that have been shorted, and then they invest in them. And that causes the stock prices to surge and the short sellers to lose a ton of money. In recent days and weeks, these small-time investors have done this with stocks for Bed Bath & Beyond, AMC Entertainment, and most notably, GameStop. Some people are cheering them on, too, hoping this gives underdogs a little more power in the market. That said, it is also raising some concerns, since some say it's sending stocks to unrealistic highs. Stay tuned for how it all plays out. The votes are in, and this year, not a single player will be elected into the National Baseball Hall of Fame for the first time since 1960. Not even baseball legends Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, or anyone else who was considered a top contender. The issue? No one got enough votes. The Baseball Writers Association of America casts ballots every year, and players who qualify have to get at least 75% of those votes. But this year, no one did. Schilling came the closest with 71% of the votes. Both Bonds and Clemens each got about 62%. It's worth noting all three just get one more chance next year. Under current rules, players get 10 shots to make it into the Hall of Fame, and they've now all been denied 9 times. The International Space Station is set to welcome a handful of space tourists next year. Yep, 3 private citizens are paying $55 million each to take a groundbreaking trip to the ISS. This will be the first fully private crew to make the journey. They're set to launch on a SpaceX rocket next January and spend 8 days at the ISS before returning to Earth. The 3 people include an American real estate investor, a Canadian investor, and a former Israeli Air Force pilot. The space tourism company Axiom Space is arranging the whole trip. You'll probably see more from that company in the future. It plans on doing a couple of private trips per year. And other companies like Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin have joined the space tourism race as well. They plan to take tourists on super short trips to the edge of space, and that could begin sometime this year. And that's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Work Wednesday, when we break down one interesting career or work-related news story every Wednesday. But first, this episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about this in the New York Times, InStyle magazine, or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it as well. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available right now, exclusively on BlueNile.com. But when they're gone, they're gone. We all know the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring to wear forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings just launched, and you can find it exclusively at BlueNile.com. Okay, now back to Work Wednesday. And today we're talking about a recent boom in pharmacy jobs. No secret here, it's because more workers are needed to help distribute COVID-19 vaccines. For example, CVS is hiring thousands of pharmacists and pharmacy technicians. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reports Walgreens and other smaller chains are offering signing bonuses and asking laid-off or retired workers to come back to work. In total, job postings for pharmacy positions were up nearly 10% in December compared to a year earlier. And as you know, pharmacies have a huge task at hand in the weeks and months ahead. CNBC reports some plan to churn out up to 25 million shots per month once the vaccine is available to the general public, hence the urgent need for new workers. At the end of the day, Axios reports this surge in demand for pharmacists is a bright spot in an otherwise struggling economy. The U.S. lost 140,000 jobs in December. But through it all, healthcare is mostly going strong, as well as other industries like construction and e-commerce. All right, thank you so much for listening today and every day. You can read more about any of the news stories mentioned in the episode notes on thenewsworthy.com. And don't forget, we offer ad-free episodes if you sign up as a Newsworthy Insider. Just go to thenewsworthy.com/insider to learn more. All right, we'll catch you up on more news to know tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.